Hello, I'm Teresa.
And I'm Janet.
And we welcome you to
Love Letters Live. And this is a show primarily about gratitude. Gratitude felt and gratitude expressed, written down, stamped, and mailed to someone. And I think, a love letter is not a love letter unless it's mailed to someone. It can be a lot of beautiful things, but to be a love letter, it really needs to be mailed to someone. It needs to be about someone else and how wonderful that person is. And it doesn't need to be just for romance. It can be for absolutely anything.
Right.
Just so it's focused on someone else.
Right. And those someone else's can be sweethearts. They can be also family members, friends, teachers, celebrities,
mm-hmm.
People who have offered us...
Fan letters are great love letters.
Fan letters of people who have done some special service for us that we particularly enjoy,
mm-hmm.
and they should be, I think they should be kind of like surprises that they
yes.
come as a gift.
I wrote a love letter actually to a wonderful anesthesiologist I had when I had some surgery years ago. He was just wonderful. And I had just such lovely confidence going out that I would also come back. And I thought he deserved something for that. So for anybody, for anything.
Besides the money that he got.
Yeah.
So every week on this show, we talk to people who have come through some challenges and joys in life and are open to sharing them. Janet, who's our
Thank
guest
you.
Today?
Well, a wonderful guest today is Joanne Weir, who is in her sixth year as the host of the PBS cooking show, Joanne Weir's Cooking Class. She is a cookbook author. I have a beautiful one sitting in front of me, her new one, and a chef. And I'm just going to go right to Joanne and ask you, Joanne, to talk about your life, how you grew up, what was important to you, what you loved best.
Okay.
Challenges, blessings.
Where do I start? Third grade?
Yes, that will be perfect.
I could go back. No, I grew up in New England.
Start with the earliest thing you remember that gave you some joy.
Okay. Well, I grew up in New England, and one of the most wonderful things is I'm a family of cooks, a family of, you know, food professionals. I always say that, you know, it's inevitable that I was going to be a cook because I really am a fourth generation professional cook. So I grew up in a family where, you know, we would eat one meal and then play on the next. But it wasn't when I went to college. It wasn't,
and you could do that on a full tummy.
Yeah. you kidding? That's the best part. But anyway, it was, I went to college. It wasn't the time. It wasn't cool to, like, go to cooking school when I got out of high school. You know, I went to college. And my parents, of course, encouraged me to go to college. And so I went and I got my degree in fine arts. And then I finished college.
What aspect?
And I in photography and also art education. And I was, you know, growing up in Massachusetts, I then moved to Boston. It was the big city, and my first job was I was an art teacher. So I did that for like 4 years or something, 4 or 5 years, and loved it. Until, I mean, maybe I liked it. Let's put it that way. I liked it. I didn't love it. And I got towards the end of the fourth year, and I just was starting to think, I love cooking. My friends all thought of me as a cook, and, you know, it was really logical. My mother had been a professional cook. My grandfather.
Well, I want to go back. I want to just stop you here, if I may, because you said fourth generation.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just really quickly talk about the first generation? That would be your great-grand-something.
Sure. Well, actually, so I'll talk about my mom. Okay, my great-grandmother. My great-grandmother had a restaurant at the turn of the century in Boston called Pilgrim's Pantry. And her husband had, I forgot how many children, but her husband had died in a sailing accident in the Boston Harbor, and so she had to support her family.
Okay.
And so she opened this restaurant and worked at this restaurant called Pilgrim's Pantry. She was the chef. So anyway, I mean, I still have the menus from that. And then my grandfather, her son, was an amazing cook, and they ended up moving towards the Berkshires, and my grandfather was given, William Cullen Bryant gave my great-grandfather his proprietor's estate, which was the house that my grandfather made into this beautiful, beautiful dairy farm in the Berkshires.
Oh.
So this was my grandfather. What he would do is he would bring people from New York, and they would get the whole experience of what was it like to kind of be on a farm. And it was a big dairy farm, 350 acres on the top of a hill in the Berkshires. Just absolutely beautiful place. 28 rooms, 11 fireplaces,
oh.
And we'd sit on the veranda. It was absolutely beautiful, but you'll love this. We would go every single Saturday to my grandfather. So people would come from New York and kind of have the experience, and he'd cook for them. and they'd spend the summer there. But when we went during the summer, he would always make us lunch, and we'd go outside underneath the maple trees, and honestly, it was the most wonderful lunch. It was, he would make things like, he would make chicken salad sandwiches, and this was chicken that he had raised, and he made homemade rolls, and he'd made his own mayonnaise, and he served us always hot potato chips. I remember that. He'd bring them out in this basket. And I love potato chips to this
Wait,
day.
So
I'm telling you.
So this was normal life for you. Were you surprised when you went out into the world and saw...
You mean like regular
peanut butter and jelly sandwiches?
Well, yeah, I'll tell you that one, too. I'll tell you about that because, yeah, I was pretty surprised.
I bet.
But I was also embarrassed because I wanted to eat, you know, what other kids got to eat. I didn't want to have all that homemade food. But anyway, but my favorite thing was we'd sit under these maple trees having this picnic. And honestly, for dessert, he would serve us maple walnut ice cream, and he had churned the ice cream. Mm. And it was the maple syrup that he had made. And we used to, in the winter, I mean, we'd go out on this horse and buggy. And I'm not that old, but we'd go out on this horse and buggy, and we would collect the maple syrup. And it was really, I had a very charmed upbringing. And then my...
I can see that.
My mother was also a professional cook. And it's sort of funny, because there I was in New England. We'd sit out on the veranda. You'll love this. And we'd look over at the hill that was, you know, maybe 5 miles away. And I would say to my mother, what's that over there, that hill? And she'd say, that's California. Look where I ended up. I mean, it's funny. So I headed to that hill. But anyway, so we would go there always on Saturday. And my mother was also an amazing cook. I mean, my mother cooked professionally. She did a lot of recipe testing with a woman named Charlotte Turgeon, who wrote a lot of cookbooks. And then my mother also did some consulting for private schools and also some catering. So she's, to this day, she's retired now, but she's just a
fantastic
cook.
Can you say what year
cook.
That was? I'm just curious about something. Go ahead.
What year?
That she was doing testing recipes?
Oh, growing up. So God, I guess it would probably be late, 70s, probably 70s,
oh, okay.
80s, yeah,
mm-hmm.
And even 90s. I grew up in a food family. I mean, you know, and food was really, really important to my family. So it was interesting to get back to, after I taught in Boston, I ended up, after the fourth year, I just said, you know what, I don't really want to teach art anymore. I want to teach something where people want to listen. So I went back to school, and I was 30 years old, and I had the support of my family and my friends, and I decided that I wanted to...
So you went to school where?
I studied with Madeleine Kamen in New England and then also in France.
I mean, that's a culinary when you say go back to school, culinary school.
So I kind of went back, for 1 year, and I got a master chef diploma. So, I mean, and I realized then that, you know, I knew I didn't want to run a restaurant, but I knew I wanted to be involved with food.
So I want to ask you something about food, because there is this perception. Some people, you know, talk about food as love and the downside of that. And you're such a sparkling, enthusiastic person. And I can see that giving is just written all over you. So what do you say about that? I mean, obviously it's your art and your gift. Talk about what food...
You mean, what does food mean to me?
Yes, what the life of cooking
well,
for people.
Well, I mean, I guess it's all about my manifesto. I mean, what I believe is that, you know, we all have to eat, and that it should be quality, and that it should be, you know, an experience that you enjoy, and something where you sit with your, whether you cook with your friends and family, I mean, at least you're sitting down with friends and family and enjoying a meal. It just seems so important to me to spend time at the table. It just does. And I learned that with my family. I mean, my mother, what we would do growing up, I mean, honestly, I believe my mother made courses, first course, main course, and dessert, because she likes spending time with us at the table. And she wanted to hear our stories of the day. How was your day today? It's so important. I think it's something we've lost.
Ooh, I agree. That's too bad. I mean, I think yes, the fast food and the... You see people sometimes driving in the morning to work or at around noontime, cramming a sandwich down their gullet while they're driving. I don't know how they don't choke to death, but they're not sharing anything. So sharing... That's what I'm after, that I wanted to know.
No, sharing, it was also, you know...
It's a vehicle for sharing.
Right.
Somehow.
It is, but it's also, you know, I always say, you know, I travel and teach all over the world, and one of the things I always say to my students is, really, the reason I'm standing up here and the reason I'm cooking for you is, I want to share something, but I also want to make someone happy. I want to bring a smile to their face, and if I can do that through food. It's really a wonderful experience for me.
Of course, you're connecting at like the most basic level of any animal.
And my mother taught me, you know, we have to eat every single day.
Okay,
you
so
know?
Talk about your mother and stories about her.
My mother's pretty special. Okay, this is a little, this will give you an idea of being involved with a food family, because food is, as I said, really important. My mother, when I was 5 years old, my mother's an amazing gardener. Besides being a great cook, she's a great gardener. And I remember her saying, I'm going to make you a tomato sandwich for lunch. And I thought to myself, why can't my mother be like all the other mothers? Why can't I have the peanut butter and jelly sandwich like the kids next door, you know? I just really wanted just to have normal food, you know, which I what I considered normal food, seeing what other kids were eating. But anyway, so my mother, she went outside, she went to the garden, and, you know, growing up in New England, you know, we had the best tomatoes, and she grew the best ones, and I don't know, they tasted better even when we were kids. But she got the tomatoes, she brought the tomatoes in, they were warm from the sun, and she sliced the tomatoes. Oh, so delicious. She toasted, she took out the bread, and she toasted it, and it was homemade bread. You'll love that. Then she spread it with mayonnaise, also homemade.
She didn't buy the mayonnaise either.
Oh, no. I'm telling you, I was such a spoiled kid, we never even had to eat the heel of the bread.
Somewhere between spoiled and humiliated.
Right.
Kind of a fine line. Yeah.
So she spread it with homemade mayonnaise, and she puts the slice of tomato on the top. And she looks at me and she says, now, whenever you work with tomatoes, whenever you cook with them, they always need a little bit of salt. It brings out the acidity and sweetness.
And you were five.
And I was five, and I thought, what am I ever going to do with this information? And I really thought about it.
You had that conscious thought at that age?
What am I going to do with this? And she put the top of the sandwich and she handed it to me.
And she cut the crust off?
No, because I like the crust. Mm-hmm. I like that crust, but I didn't like the ends of the bread. So anyway, she handed it to me. And honestly, I thought I had died and gone to heaven. I thought it was the most delicious thing I'd ever tasted. I loved it. I'd probably been eating tomato sandwiches before that. But there was something about that tomato sandwich that she talked about that I still remember.
Because she talked about it?
Maybe it was the salt. Maybe. I don't know. But the funniest part was I wrote a book. The third book I wrote was called You Say Tomato. It was a book all about tomatoes, and I dedicated it to my mother for teaching me to make the perfect tomato sandwich.
What does your mother look like?
My mother, I just was with my mother last week, so that's really easy to talk about. She's very beautiful, and all my friends say it. I mean, she's very beautiful for her age. She's 82 years old, and she's in incredible shape, and the best part is my mother always wants to lose 5 pounds. Mm-hmm. And my mother is probably 5'6". When I said that to her last week, she said, Joe, I'm really much shorter than that. And, you know, she's kind of shrinking. But she's 5'6", and she probably weighs 130 for 82. Oh. I'm telling you, I don't think she needs to lose the 5 pounds anymore. She's in great shape. She's got this beautiful silvery gray hair that she doesn't dye. She's just
curly like yours?
It's kind of wavy.
Oh. I just want listeners to know, I'm looking here at a woman with the most beautiful bronze-colored ringlets all around her face.
Thanks.
Well, people can see her on TV.
That's true. I'm sorry.
That's
Every Saturday at noon, PBS.
Yes. PBS KQED.
At KQED in San Francisco.
It's also on a lot of other stations around the Bay Area, too. But
you can Google her.
Yes, that's right, joannweir.com. And so anyway, it was, you know, so that was just the tomato sandwich. I remember going to school, and I was so embarrassed because I always had to take homemade chocolate chip cookies.
Oh, me too. I wanted Oreos like the other kids.
Me too. I wanted Chips Ahoy.
Oh,
isn't that terrible? I would trade with kids to give them my homemade cookies. Uh-huh. Kids thought that I had the charmed existence. Now, you'll love this. My mother tested recipes, meaning Charlotte Turgeon would write cookbooks. My mother would take the recipes and she would, you know, see if they worked or not. We'd get home from school. My mother loved pastry. We would get home from school and honestly, on the counter, she'd have spread out 30 different desserts that she'd tested.
It's a miracle she weighs 130.
Oh, no. It's about eating and dieting. It was great. It's a great upbringing. But anyway, so she would say, we'd get home from school and we'd walk in the door and she'd say, now I want you to try this and try this and try this and try this. And we'd be like rolling our eyes. You know, we didn't want to try all those. And I didn't really like dessert that much, believe it or not. I'm sure it's because I had to eat so many of them. But anyway, so I would, you know, say, oh, and she'd say, okay, if you don't eat them, I'm not going to make them for you anymore. So anyway, then we had the guilt. We had the guilt. So we got really smart.
If you don't eat your cookies, you won't get dinner.
Yeah, right. So we got smart, though. We brought our friends home with us, and they thought, oh, my God, homemade desserts. They ate them all, and she was happy, too, so it was perfect.
Okay, well, I want to get to your love letter in a minute. I think you need to...
Let's just remind our listeners that this is KUSF 90.3 FM, Love Letters Live. We're here every week with terrific guests, and hope you'll join us.
Thank you. So let's go back to your mother. What is it that she kind of handed down to you in the bigger picture? And who gets your love letter today?
Well, first of all, my mother gets my love letter.
Have you written her love letter? Do you write love letters as a rule? Do you write easily or you don't have time?
I know. I write to my mother. I've written some amazing letters to my mother.
Where does
amazing
she live?
Ones. In Massachusetts.
Okay.
But I've really expressed it. And my mother's a very expressive person, too. So,
She receives them well.
Yeah, she does. She really does. And she saves them.
Oh, now there's the point that we talk about all the time. People save them.
Yes. She gave me a stack recently of little things I'd written to
and
her.
And it's so interesting. That's what people save, and for good reason.
Right.
Because they are something so... First of all, it is a custom-designed gift.
Right. You know, it's funny you say that. I have this file, and it's called Rainy Day. And it's just in my file cabinet, and I put everything in it, like all the people, you know, my students and people that write to me from all over the world saying, you know, how much they love something that I've shared with them, or they love what I've done, or they love me, or the whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And I put them in that Rainy Day file. I think I have a great life because I never look in that file.
Because there's always more coming.
I never have to. Well, that, but I think, you know, I'm just happy. But I think it's a very nice thing to know that's there.
And for other reasons beyond you, somebody later is going to find those.
Right. Right.
And know something about you and know a lot about you.
Right.
And for the PhDs and the historians, I mean, that's valuable information.
Right, right, right.
So you've written to your mother before. What's this letter going to be about then?
You know...
And what were the others about?
Well, no, I would always tell her that I think she's, you know, a pretty extraordinary person and a pretty extraordinary mother. You know, it's funny. I'm sitting here thinking, God, I could write to my father, too, because that would be a really interesting one.
And that happens all the time here. People start out with one thing, and as they're thinking, that's...
I haven't written to my father.
Okay, that's interesting.
I haven't. I mean, my mother, I could
together?
Go on and on and on. Yes, yes, yes. My parents have been married for 50... Let me think here.
Over 50.
Yes.
That's good.
59 years.
Wow.
Yes.
So what's this letter going to be about? What are the three things you most want your mother to know in this letter? Or one thing or four things?
The one thing that is so extraordinary about my mother, I think, is that she, and I'm not sure I've ever told her this, but what she did was she really guided us. I mean, she told us what was right and she told us what was wrong, but she let us make our own mistakes. And I think for me, I don't know if it was important to my sisters and my brother, but for me, that was really important. I was a little bit of a mischievous one. My father called me his wandering gypsy. I've never stopped traveling. I travel so much for my work. I mean, I was always out there and always kind of testing the limits. And I think it's great. For someone like me, it was a perfect way for her to bring me up. And I think that's one thing I would like to let her know.
That's going to be a wonderful thing for her to hear.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
I mean, I think that's a great thing that a parent does, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because, you know, sometimes she wasn't about control, you know? She was just about letting us know what was right and what was wrong and what she believed in and letting us make our own decisions.
What were the things that, in her beliefs that were the most important?
My mother's a great person. She's just, you know, do to other people what you'd want someone to, what you'd want. How do I say that? How you want to be treated, you know. Do unto others
as you would want them to do to you.
Do unto you, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But she was just, you know, she's... And I think the other thing that's great about my mother, and I think it's something that's really helped me in my work, because, you know, I'm in a really public place, and, you know, people see me, and they know, you know, recognize me all the time. And I think my mother... is a very shy person, and there's a shyness about me. Also, believe it or not, even though I'm a talker.
Where does it show up?
I get tested a lot. I mean, if I have to give a talk for 4,000 people, I'm nervous. If it's a new situation, I'm nervous. And I think that's kind of nice. I think it's nice to have... And the other thing is my mother never takes anything for granted. She just doesn't, you know? Mm. She... And when I say that, I mean... You know, when something good happens, it isn't like she feels like, oh, I deserve that. She's always thankful, you know? She's always thankful. She also has I'm sure I'm telling you many more than three. She has an unbelievable.
You can tell me 20.
Okay.
I mean, it's your
She has unbelievable family values. Just unbelievable family values. I have the closest family. You know, they're my most incredible support, and I think that has gotten me through so many things. Just knowing that my family's there. I went through a divorce, and my parents, I was so afraid. I don't know what I was thinking. I guess I was thinking that my mother, my parents were going to be mad at me. I don't know why. I hadn't done anything wrong, really. And my parents were the most supportive people. They were just, they came to spend time with me. They talked to me nonstop. And that's when I really also got very close to my dad. So I don't know. My mother just has amazing family values.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the other thing is she just realizes what's important in life, you know?
Mm-hmm. She doesn't get taken away by fluff or superficial.
No, she reads through people and things really, really quickly. And she's taught me that about intuition. There's another thing I'd like to thank her intuition. I mean, she's guided me a lot mm-hmm. in ways that, you know, I might not have otherwise seen. And I think, you know, that is really a special thing. You know, it's funny, when I was dating people. Boy, I'm getting kind of personal here, but anyway, I was dating people, and every time I would call my mother and I would tell her little things, she was really funny. She just got right away, she could tell if the person was a good person or a bad. She gave me advice, and I thought, you know, as an 82-year-old woman, she's got the advice. She's lived life. Even though she's just been with my dad, and she's been with my dad that long, mm-hmm. you know, she had wonderful advice for me.
Mm-hmm. But don't you think that also has to do with her being really in tune with you?
Yes, I'm sure it does, yes. Yes, I don't think she could have done that with, you know, right, the neighbor or somebody she didn't know. It's true.
So it goes back to the family values how much she values you and your relationship.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are you going to talk to her about that tomato sandwich?
Oh, I've told her about the tomato sandwich.
Okay,
I'm going to tell you, reinforcing, this is a great story about my mother. So I made cookies. She, you know, being, you know, professional chef, and then me also, you know, I liked cooking too when I was a kid, and she didn't really like us to be in the kitchen very much, which is interesting.
Underfoot,
she got really, she got a little bit nervous, and every time she was going to entertain, she was a little bit edgy. So anyway, I remember this one time I said, Mom, I want to make oatmeal cookies. So I went into the kitchen, and she wasn't there, and she was in the other room, and she was doing something, and I remember yelling into my mother and saying, Mom, you ran out of baking soda. And she said, that's so funny, I just bought baking soda, you know, just last week. And so anyway, I made the cookies, and I put them, you know, I took the scoop, everything she taught me, you know, and put them on the...
How old were you here?
That's probably eight. Mm-hmm. 8 to 10 or something. Mm-hmm. And I put them on the baking sheet, and she helped me put them in the oven, and I will never, ever forget this. We put them in the oven, and I turned the light on in the oven, peered in, we're looking in the oven, and honestly, I watched those cookies grow into one big cookie down the sides and onto the floor of the oven. I was like, Mom, what happened? And I, of course, didn't blame it on me. I thought, of course, something was wrong with the recipe or something. Well, anyway, instead of a teaspoon and a half of baking powder, I put a cup and a half of baking powder. So anyway, as we were scraping those cookies into the trash, I'll never forget this, honestly, thing she did was she looked at me and she tasted one. She said, they still taste good. And I thought, you know, they tasted like crap.
Yeah,
they were horrible.
Good at all.
But I just thought, what a sweet mom, you know? And I've thought of that story so many times, you know? Just an amazing way to make your... the other thing about my mother is, I mean, she's so reinforcing that, you know, we all have just... my sisters and my brother, we just have good feelings about ourselves, you know, and nothing that's inflated or just, mm-hmm. you know, we just are very positive. And she just shared a ton of love with us. I mean, just mm-hmm. amazing capacity as being mom, just being an amazing mom.
Okay, well, that's a wonderful letter.
Right. And what our listeners can't see is that while you're talking, Janet is taking notes about all the things that you're remembering.
Yes, and I'm doing that. Because so often, I think we all do this, I do it myself, you say something and you're very involved with it at the moment, and later you can forget a particular thing that you felt while you're doing the writing. So it's really nice to just have it in front of you. So I've just scritched down some of these things. I hope you can read my handwriting so you can remember the beautiful things you said.
Yeah,
and you can add to them, of course.
Right.
Now, you said that, and one of the questions I always ask because I think it's important, and I love specifics in love letters, and you've done a lot of that. To say you made me feel so special is nice, but it doesn't really mean anything. It doesn't really evoke anything. You made me feel so special by eating my huge mass oatmeal right. mess and saying it tasted good. That's really something,
right. mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and that's
right.
Oops,
right.
Excuse me, I just tore that paper off. And made a lot of noise.
Thank you.
I forget how sensitive radio can be. So, what kind of stationery will you use? Oh, I'm sorry. Did she have a nickname for you, a love name for you? Do you use?
Yeah, she did. Well, she calls me Joe, but the best part right now is my boyfriend's name is Joe, so it's Joe and Joe, so I think it's cute. But my mother, when I was little, they called me Joe and Joey. Isn't that funny?
Like
I was Joey.
Like when you sign a letter to her, how do you sign it?
No, I sign. I always say Joe.
Joe. Yes. Okay.
I've sort of gone back to being Joanne, but I'm still Joe. It's I'll never forget telling my mom once I wanted to change my name and I wanted to be Joanna, mm-hmm. and I'm Joanne. I wanted to change it. And I wanted to be Joanne Sears. I wanted to go back to my mother's maiden name. That's how much I loved my mom. I wanted to have her name.
Jot that down.
Yeah,
that's a
I
nice
know.
Thing. Did she know that?
Yeah, I did say it to her, and she said, excuse me, I think she keep your dad's name.
Yes. Okay, that's a nice thing to recollect. So what kind of stationery will you use?
I have to think about that. I mean, I don't know. It probably, it probably would be something that's very Italian. I mean, I love anything that's got something that's